is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Jordy Nelson visiting the Seattle Seahawks, and I wouldn't mind him being in Seattle. But I'm relatively indifferent to it compared to someone like Justin Houston, who I'd really like to see. Really like to see the Seahawks add somebody who figures to be a pass-rushing threat to this team, but getting a playmaker, somebody with Jordy Nelson's size, I certainly wouldn't mind that part of it. Free agency has now reached the... We're now at the bargain bin sifting. You got some nicks and some dents on anybody that's going to come here. You've got a pitch to make to them that, hey, you get to come to a team with a proven contending quarterback, an elite quarterback. We expect to make the playoffs, and you can play a huge role on that, but there's nobody out there that's going to be the knock your socks off, no warts. Anybody out there has got a little something that's wrong with them.
Yeah, you know what? Jordy Nelson, I kind of go back and forth on this. The thing is, you look at the depth chart right now, it's Baldwin, Jerron Brown, and then Amar Darboh still on the, was he on the practice squad at the end of the year?
He was spent last year on injured reserve.
Oh, he was on IR, that's right. And then you got Lockett and Moore. So, yeah, there's room for one more there, and it's just a function of price. I was talking to the professor about this earlier that, you know, sure, I'd love to have Jordy Nelson, but it's going to be, you know, is it for the right price? Is it for $4 million, $5 million? No. But if it's for $1.5 million, $2 million, sure, why not? Which is crazy. $2 million is like the bargain basement. But, you know, the thing that he would bring is this guy is a pro. He's been doing it for a long time. And the older you get, the more technical you need to be. And I think he's already known as a technical type of receiver. He's going to run really good routes. And I know this is hokey to bring up, but if you look at Russell Wilson throwing footballs at the objects on the Jimmy Fallon show, he hit a surprising number of them. I mean, he's
They had plates.
Yeah, they threw plates.
Jello.
Yeah, there was a big Jello mold. It was orange Jello. There was a big milkshake, you know. But, I mean, it's just a stupid example of how he's a very accurate passer. And Russell needs somebody to run very accurate routes. And, you know, David Moore, that was something he struggled with. So maybe Jordy Nelson brings that to the table. But, again, it's just a function of whether or not it's a good price for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I just look at it, and I just keep looking at Jordy Nelson's numbers and what he could bring here, and then considering what you have here as the third and fourth receivers with, you know, I mean, looking at David Moore and what Jerron Brown did last year, and I mentioned yesterday that I didn't think they were up to snuff, but I don't know, maybe you guys feel differently. Maybe you feel like David Moore is going to be okay in time. Maybe you feel like Jerron Brown, the touchdown catches he had, the limited number of receptions, but still 5 touchdowns, 16 receptions. But I say bring Jordy Nelson in. And the professor said yesterday he doesn't think Jerron Brown's in danger of not being on this team, but I disagree. I think Jerron Brown will be off the team if they bring Jordy Nelson in because it's salary's pretty similar. The Raiders didn't want to pay him $3 million. I imagine Jordy Nelson would be looking at 2 to 2.5 here perhaps. I don't have sources telling me this. I'm just speculating, but I think it'd be I'd rather see Jordy Nelson on the team than Jerron Brown next year.
Isn't the defense what needs to get better though? Like you look at last season and how they played, their offense was good. It's the defense that I find myself having more questions about.
Well, then who do you want to see? You want to see Justin Houston in here but how much?
$6-7 million? I don't think I'd be complaining about that. Guy had almost double digit sacks last year.
Do you think that would get it done?
I don't know.
And Ziggy Ansah, I think he's...
I'm not as interested in Ansah. Ansah's younger, but Ansah has always... The reputation and the way people have talked about him, he's a physical marvel, someone with all of the physical traits that you look for in an edge rusher, but someone who was learned and picked up the game later and for whom football is a job as opposed to a passion. And that's not a knock because there's nothing wrong with looking at football as a means to an end. But I think that Pete works best with guys for whom football is really seen as this is my passion, this is the thing that I am going to do, and I'm going to sink my entire person into. I think that's the way Pete's coaching is built, is to take into account the entire person, and I think that's who he gets the most out of.
Yeah, I agree with you, but you know, Dave, let me ask you something about this, and maybe you feel differently than I do, because I thought the run defense was more of a problem last year, and everybody talks about, oh, you need another pass rusher to go with Frank Clark. I understand that, but you have Jerron Reed, and I know that you're skeptical on whether he can produce another double-digit sack season this coming year, but he could. he could. He could be on the come, and we'll find out about that. And, you know, a lot of guys in the draft that are pass rusher types, and maybe they'll still get one of these guys like a Justin Houston. But I'm more concerned about the run defense. I didn't think the pass rush was a problem last year. I know they weren't top tier in the league, but they weren't bottom tier either. And so I just, you know, and everybody's focused on pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. I want to see him stop the run first and then, you know, worry about the pass rush and see what you can find maybe in the draft.
I agree. I mean, it wasn't a problem last year. And look, remember the number I put on it? I know Clayton had a different number. It was 39-40. They got 42? And maybe it was 41 because they took a sack away from Frank. But, that to me wasn't the biggest problem. I'm more concerned with the run stopping. And they did get this meter kid from, was he with Cleveland?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's really good at that. And so they've done a really good job in the past signing guys like that, you know, whether it's McDaniel, Ataba Rubin, you know, those kinds of guys. And so, yeah, I mean, if it's... You got to get a nickel guy though. And I think you need some depth there. And so you're right, Danny. I mean, it's more about the defense right now, but you know, you're probably going to build that some other way. And, you know, maybe it's through the draft that you're planning on doing. So, you know, why not sign Jordy Nelson if he is, and I think that's going to leave Amar Darbo the odd man out because I value Jerron Brown.
I disagree with
Jim on that, but you know, other than that, it's probably more important that they get defenders in here, and a guy like Justin Houston, who had 22 sacks in 2014. It's pretty impressive.
He's a monster, and he's past the prime of his career. The fact that Kansas City let him go tells you that the team that knows him best thinks he was no longer worth that primetime pass-rushing contract they signed him to. I'm more excited about the possibility of them adding Aaron Lynch than I am about Jordy Nelson. And Jordy Nelson.
What do you like about Lynch?
Well, I like how long he is. And I remember him playing for San Francisco. And this is one of the problems when you start looking at other teams' players. I remember how good he was against the Seahawks. And I went back and looked. And he had, in his first two seasons in the league, he had 3 sacks against the Seahawks. In the 4 games he played, he had 3 sacks against the Seahawks. Maybe it was even 3.5. Now, he's got 18 sacks for his career, and if he signs with Seattle, it would be his third team in 3 years. So that's not a guy who has carved out a niche, and he's somebody to, woohoo, all your pass rush is solved. But what I remember of him, and seeing him as a younger player coming out of South Florida, and I believe he was a fourth-round pick, was that, man, that's a guy that's he's certainly physically unique. And I find myself looking, where are they going to get their pass rush from? Where are they going to improve the defense? I don't think you can ever have enough pass rush that you can always add to that. And I think that this is the part of free agency where the Seahawks excel, where they're kind of up to their elbows and wading through and looking at all of the different options that were there, and all of the top tier free agents are off the market. Everybody that's clicked buy it now to get the guy that's the apple of their eye, the one without any warts. The Seahawks are best when they're looking at guys who have been previously overlooked or knocked because they don't do one thing well. The Seahawks excel at finding guys in this stage of free agency.
Yeah, I think you're looking at the same time that when Michael Wilhoit was there, you know, and then they had the kid that quit because of the concussions, Borland.
Yes.
You know, but they had a really good linebacking crew, and Aaron Lynch was a big part of it. I didn't realize he was 6'6", and he's about 275 pounds, so he can play defensive end. I think he's listed as a linebacker, but you know, I always look at that position being like Barkevious Mingo, Bruce Irvin, Aaron Lynch. They sort of fit that bill there. You know, I don't know about Aaron Lynch as far as pass drops and things like that, but we know that Ken Norton was able to teach it to Bark Mingo last year because, remember, he said, this is totally new to me. He hadn't lined up basically in a two-point stance. So, yeah, this could be a good value to get something out of Aaron Lynch. Now, he had played in a couple of seven games. He got hurt 9 games in each of the last 2 years, or I'm sorry, the 3 years ago, and then he missed 3 games last year, and the sack totals have gone down. But like 2015, yeah, the guy was, you know, he was getting to the quarterback, 6.5 sacks. So, and again, this is just a function of price. If this guy is, why do you think, it was on the Seahawks or Bruce Irvin? Because Bruce Irvin's had a couple of shots to come here. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it's the Seahawks that they're not giving him the right kind of money.
Bruce, no!
Bruce, took a one-year contract in Carolina. I don't think it's a product of the Seahawks. I know that the decision he made in the middle of last season after the Raiders let him go and he chose to go to Atlanta, that was not a function of price.
Bruce, no!
That was maybe the Falcons sweetened the pot a little bit, but he had every option to come to the Seahawks, and it indicated to the Seahawks that he wanted to come, and then essentially stopped returning their calls, meaning that he'd settled on something else. And he flirted with the Seahawks this year. He batted his eyes on Twitter. He was going back and forth with Frank Clark.
Oh, is that right?
Talking about some of those things.
Bruce, no!
He chose not to come back here last year. I didn't expect him to choose to come here this year. And that's some of that's the Seahawks decided he wasn't a pass rusher. That's what he wants to do. He wants to rush the passer. You remember how he felt? He was a good linebacker. And he didn't like doing it. He would rather rush the passer than be an exceptional linebacker.
That's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, that how good he is at it too. And you know, watching him in camp, because I was skeptical when they moved him to linebacker, and I thought, well, he's got a lot to learn. But man, he just had a real natural his position. He's really good. Like, I would compare him kind of like Justin Coleman. You know how I rave about Justin Coleman. Trey Flowers has a little bit of that in him, where he's always square to the line of scrimmage. He never crosses his feet over. He shuffles. He moves like perfectly as a linebacker. And Bruce was really good at it. And he would have easily traded those two pick sixes that he had in 2015 or 16. He would have traded those in for sacks. And yeah, that's all he cares about. So, you know, and he probably thought maybe in Carolina he's going to get more of a chance to put his hand in the dirt rather than play linebacker here in Seattle.
I'd like to say that that's one of my favorite expressions, the put the hand in the dirt. I've always just really enjoyed that. I seriously do. I like it. Just put your hand in the dirt. Like, okay, I can get behind the visualization of that. It means the linebacker puts his hand in the ground. Let's go.
I'm just looking at Lynch's stats here, and Dave mentioned that he's had injuries, and so he hasn't played full seasons the last 3 years, but still only 5.5 sacks the last 27 games. What about Rasheem Green and Jacob Martin? I mean, we talk about Frank Clark all the time for good reason, but it's not like they're minus other potential pass rushers here on the team already.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Clayton about this morning. Rasheem Green, it's not like, I don't want to say that I was disappointed in him, because he's a rookie. And anytime a rookie plays at all, I think it's a miracle, because it's just really hard to pick up. And that's just because of my own personal experience. You see rookies like Trey Flowers, that was just amazing what he did. I mean, a guy that was drafted as a corner, but he was really a safety, to go out in his rookie year and play that way. But Rasheem Green, I guess I was disappointed, because in the preseason, I really liked him. The way he was using his feet and his hands, I thought, okay, this guy's going to be good right away. Jacob Martin was a lot more raw, and he was the one that really developed. I mean, coming off the edge, I think he's going to be special, you know, and I don't think he's a one-trick pony either, because he's got other moves, and I think he's a really smart guy, and he's going to be prepared, and so that guy's really exciting. But I think Rasheem Green, I'd say look for him to take a huge step this year. But, you know, the reason why you sign a guy like Aaron Lynch is because you're afraid those guys might not take that step and be as big of a part as you need them to be.
And what about Deion Jordan?
Yeah, that's the only thing about – do you see the commercial with Deion Jordan for Special Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah, what a great kid, man. And, you know, I just thinking about him the other day, and when you talk to him – and you know that he has put his, you know, off-field troubles in the past. And I really root for him. The problem with him, though, is just health. You know, he's just intermittently healthy. But you look at, I think he had one sack last year. But there was a couple of games, like in the Ram game, where he made a big difference of just, you know, allowing other guys to make plays by, you know, the pursuit angle that he took, or taking on a double team or whatever. I mean, Deion Jordan's one of those guys, when you watch film, if he doesn't have a bunch of stats, yeah. But when you look at it on film, he helps the defense.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We are now going to provide a community service, because it's that time of year when all of America needs to know what channel True TV is.
Oh, that's right. That's a good point.
Yep.
702.
Everybody ready? It's 705, I believe, is the HD, according to the Comcast channel lineup that I'm looking at right now.
You're right. It's 705.
705.
Have you ever watched anything else on True TV?
No, I don't think I've not watched one other thing ever on True TV.
After the games, there was something called like Parking Wars. and it was a tow truck company, and then they would have people come in there and scream and yell at him, and I got kind of hooked on that. And it was produced by J-Lo.
It was good, though, huh?
It was. It was, yeah. Check out True TV.
Well, what's True TV known for besides this?
I don't know.
Apparently Parking Wars, which is produced by J-Lo.
I think that's what it was called.
Can I ask you one thing, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
What appealed to you? Did you side with the people getting the car towed or the tow truck operator when they would come in hollering?
Well, you got to kind of like the tow truck drivers because everybody looks at tow truck drivers as just pure evil, right? And, you know, these guys are nice guys and they're just doing their job. And, yeah, you know, so the people coming in and screaming and yelling at them, it was entertaining.
You kind of feel that, hey, the sign was there. You got towed for good reason. The person that changed my feeling on tow truck drivers the most, Kelly Starbuck. She lives over on Mercer Island. She runs her and her husband operate a tow truck company. She runs the Shar Pei Rescue that my wife and I have adopted three different dogs from.
Oh, cool.
She is the patron saint of Shar Peis here in Seattle. She's just orchestrated her second international rescue.
Wow.
Yeah, second international rescue, Peach being the first who we house at our place. True TV, channel 49. And then channel 705 for HD. You got the play-in games that start tonight. It is the NCAA tournament. I've already started looking ahead, just trying to see next week's travel to Kansas City once the Huskies win their first two games, beating Utah State on Friday, and then throwing the zone. I realize that I am the former person who thought zone was for cowards. I'm now looking forward to them throwing the ice ball in the snowball war. The zone defense going to be an ice ball against number one seeded UNC.
Do you feel like you owe Dave and I a thank you? Because we taped the interview with Mike Hopkins that we're going to run at 3:30, and we didn't throw you under the bus. We didn't say, hey, coach, you know, we work with a guy who doesn't really like zone defense. But you've converted, though, haven't you?
I'm completely converted. I'm now officially looking forward to watching them throw the changeup at everybody and have them, oh, man, look at this length. Yeah, I'm 100% on board with the zone defense.
That's okay, Jim. I threw him under the bus last year, and I don't think you were here, but him and I interviewed Hop, and I said, you know, there's a guy here that's about 5'8" and slow-footed and could really benefit from zone defense if he was playing basketball, and he doesn't like it.
Don't like the zone. Now I do. Now yeah, I love the zone. The Huskies getting ready to take on. The tournament begins. I love this time of year. It is my favorite sporting event, and it's not close. I love and am looking forward to. I'm flying Wednesday night, going to head over to Salt Lake City. We're watching. Got our tickets all set for the first two sessions on Thursday. The session, Gonzaga going to be there. I think I'm going to be rooting for Fairleigh Dickinson. Fairleigh Dickinson, I think they're about to get underway.
It's
in the
Prairie View?
Yeah, taking on Prairie View. Whoever wins that game, I'll be rooting for them.
Close game, though. Fairleigh Dickinson favored by 2.
Yeah, going to be. It's you throw all the records out when these two teams get together. And then who else? Belmont's playing tonight as well.
The Belmont Bears.
Yeah.
You know where Belmont is?
Is it New Jersey?
I think it's in Nashville.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's down in Tennessee, I believe.
I was just thinking Belmont Stakes.
Yeah, you're thinking of the racetrack.
Yeah, the racetrack. Yeah,
that's in Queens.
Well, I wasn't even right there. New Jersey, New York.
Yeah, close enough.
Some sort of colony.
Not exactly.
Oh, by the way, I was wrong. It was called South Beach Tow.
South Beach Tow was the name of it, not Parking Wars?
Yeah, not Parking Wars. Duh, they say. Okay, yeah, like I should. That's on the front of my brain, tattooed on my brain.
Jim, who are you rooting for in the tournament?
I'm rooting for Gonzaga and Virginia because I have them meeting in the final game. Championship game.
Virginia affection comes from Tony Bennett.
It does. Yeah.
Affection comes from what?
Just a stat that I saw about how great they are offensively, and I don't want to read too much into that game they had against St. Mary's. I think that was just kind of an aberration for Gonzaga. And they're only they've only lost three games, and they were to all good teams besides St. Mary's. And St. Mary's is even in the tournament, so.
Because they beat Gonzaga.
I've got Virginia winning the whole thing just because I want to see if defense can do it.
I think the leading scorer for St. Mary's, I think he physically resembles a goat. Like, not the goat, like the greatest of all time. I think he looks like a goat.
He looks like a billy goat.
Yes. With his beard and everything else, I think he physically resembles a goat.
All right.
Dave, who are you rooting for?
You know, I'm going to root for Auburn. I got caught up watching the SEC championship, their tournament championship.
Scandal-ridden Auburn.
Yeah. Well, Bruce Pearl, at first, I thought he was kind of a clown because he screams and yells at his players, and I just was looking at the players going, are they really getting fired up about this? And then you saw how they interacted with him after the game, and they won the SEC tournament. And so I kind of like that team. I'm going to be rooting for the Zags. Of course, I'll be rooting for the Huskies, but they just played so poorly lately. But, man, when you hear the interview, Mike Hopkins is a very inspiring guy, you know, and I feel like he never has a bad day. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Pete Carroll. So he's one that that I think can maybe you got to get past Utah State first, man.
Yes, absolutely. It's that's a game. Utah State probably is. Are they favored in that game? I would expect they would.
They
be
are given, by three.
Given the way that Washington finished at an 8-9 seed, that game is going to be at 3:45 on Wednesday. It is Danny David Moore. We have Mike Hopkins. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. But right now we take two.
Take two. Mike Trout takes any questions about his future off the table today, signing a 12-year deal with the Angels worth over $430 million.
Good
you wanna,
night.
You want to hear something ridiculous? In 5 years, that's going to look like a bargain.
It actually is a bargain if you look at what he's making per year compared to Machado. He actually, that's a good deal for the Angels, as psychotic as that sounds.
Is it? Is it guaranteed?
It is.
Yes, every ounce of it is guaranteed.
Oh my goodness!
So what's Machado? 33 a year, and then
Machado is just 30 a year.
Oh, he's 30.
Right?
Yeah, and this is 36.
What's Harper?
Harper was less per year because he signed a 13-year contract.
36 though, Dave.
Oh my God! I know you broke it down in your email. What was it? Yes. Every other week you get what's your deposit?
Yeah, $3 million a month, and then if you're every other week, $1.5 million every week, $500,000. Yeah.
500
I mean, I know taxes are being taken out of it, but if you're just looking at it on the whole,
yeah.
It's a lot of money. Trout probably could have made more if he'd played this out toward free agency.
I'll bet you he will not be voting for Bernie Sanders.
Probably not. Probably unlikely.
Wasn't it like an 80% tax bracket for the wealthiest?
Although Michael Bennett, a man who complained about the size of his contract or the lack of millions in there, he's a very strong Bernie Sanders advocate. So you can't always count on an athlete to vote in their own financial self-interest.
Yeah, maybe a lack of research on his part.
Possible, or just a man that wanted to make sure that he paid his fair share.
Mike Trout is so much fun to watch. And, you know, I feel like he's one of the people that won't let the money go to his head.
You know, I agree.
He seems like a very down-to-earth guy. And I don't know why, but when he was in the booth or that box at the Philly games, the Eagle games, just the way he was interacting with his buddies. And I think somebody brought him a football one time and he was like, wow, like a little kid kind of. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good kid. I don't think that there's going to be any problem with him, you know, coasting because he's got this $430 million contract.
Local favorite, Braden Bishop, UW alum, makes the Mariners' opening day roster for the first time.
Good for him, man. He's never played above AA. Didn't play an inning in AAA, and now he's got a chance to make his major league debut. Is it opening day? Is it opening morning? Is it opening
night?
It's
opening day.
Mariners
it's weird.
Released an email that said opening night because it's night where they're playing.
Okay, opening night. But
it's
2:35
a.m. here, which we will be carrying live here. It's on 7:10.
Is this opening night or is tomorrow? It's confusing.
I'm totally confused.
It's confusing because they're playing tomorrow, but it's tonight.
When's Major League Baseball kick it off?
It's early tomorrow morning.
First pitch.
My brother used
to. Is it the 28th?
My brother used to use tomorrow
here
today.
In Seattle, yeah.
Yeah.
Where we'd say, like, when's this going to happen? He would say tomorrow today. And we pieced it back because it was the promotion for the Today Show when they would say tomorrow on today. And it completely screwed up his sense of where he would say tomorrow today. So it's tonight today.
Okay, well, it's tomorrow already in Japan. So we're going to call it tomorrow. Because technically it's tomorrow for us, too.
But right now it's today in Japan.
No, it's tomorrow in Japan.
Are they sleeping?
Oh, it's 7 in the morning.
Anyways, Braden Bishop made the
roster. I see what you're saying. So
made the roster.
It's tonight in Japan.
Correct.
Are you staying up, Dave?
No.
We're annoying.
I will not. Yes, you are.
I think it'd be fun to stay up tonight.
Really?
You staying up, Jess?
I'm going to wake up. I'm going to go to bed early and wake up for the first couple innings.
Oh, she's going the old man route.
I am an old man.
That's the old man route.
Here's what's sad is that I get up at 5:15 usually, so I'm going to just get up a little bit earlier than normal to catch the end of it.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking about doing? I'm thinking about using my filter here. Should I use it?
No.
Okay.
Right. I already know what this is going to be. Go ahead, though.
No, I was thinking about, so the game starts at 2:30, right? So the Mariner pregame show starts at 1:30, and Shannon will be on the pregame show, and I'm worried about falling asleep if I listen to the pregame show. So I don't know. Maybe
that'll
I should,
get people to tune in,
maybe
Jim.
I should.
Anyway, let's get to
maybe
Coach
I should
Hopkins.
Skip that.
I wonder why Shannon doesn't like Jim.
Should I have used the filter, Jess?
It's coming up.
I'm a proponent of always using the filter, Jim. I didn't have a vote this time.
Mike Hopkins, he joins us next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and more. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's Danny, Dave, and more, and we have now on the phone Mike Hopkins, head coach of University of Washington basketball. Go Huskies. Coach, tell us, how exciting was that when you found out you were going to be in the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know what? It was incredible, to be honest with you. And after a loss where we didn't play our best to Oregon, and getting there and then all of a sudden, you know, having the opportunity, you know, the next day you're kind of down and out, and the players started coming over the house, and you started hearing the CBS, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, you know, that music going, and it starts changing your mood a little bit. And it was a beautiful day. The sun was out in Seattle, so it was like all these things were coming out. And then sitting there and hearing your name was a dream come true, I know, for a lot of guys.
Coach, this is awesome. The idea of you guys being back in the tournament for the first time since 2011, I know as a Husky fan, I'm really excited to see. How much of your preparation is about the opponent, and how much is it about you guys playing your game?
I think a lot of it, obviously, you've got to scout your team. You know who you're playing, and you know you just got to make it simple in terms of what we're trying to take away. But a lot of times, you know, you're managing your own team's mindset, energy, and making sure that they're together. And I know when we're all connected that way and disciplined defensively, you know, we're a different team. And this time of the year, it's such a long season. There's injuries. There's all sorts of, you know, mental fatigue, physical fatigue, life fatigue, when you have a high level of energy and you're playing together, it really becomes about you, you know. And so I would say 78% us, 30% scout.
Hey, Coach, you've been in so many NCAA tournaments there at Syracuse under Jim Boeheim. I'm just wondering, with your experience, what the best advice is you can pass along to your players who haven't experienced it?
I think the biggest thing, we've had a lot of success, just we do what we do. And that goes back to my 70-30, is you got to focus on, you know, what has got us here. And, you know, you're not going to change it. You're not going to put on all new offenses or defenses. You got to do what you do, and you got to do it better. And so I think a big thing with Coach Boeheim was nothing really changed. You know, it just, you know, the excitement of the tournament got the guys juiced up, but we became more locked in, obviously, on what we were doing, but then on the scout, like how we had to execute to win. And when you have your energy and you have your mindset and you're together, guess what? You can go out and execute better, less breakdowns. And so, you know, that KISS, keep it simple, stupid, is Coach Boeheim at its best.
Hey, Coach, when you've had sort of your power outages offensively against Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament, what have been some of the things that have stood out to you that are fixable?
I think, you know, Oregon poses a lot of problems because they play a matchup zone, and they're going for man, they're going to zone, and they eliminate you running specific plays for certain guys, so it's hard to dictate who's getting your shots. And then on top of it, you know, they've got, you know, aggressive length on the perimeter with a great shot blocker and Kenny Wooten around the basket. And the first half, I thought we did a really good job, and our defense was there, and we were down two, and we didn't shoot well, and they shot exceptionally well. What we did in the second half, we allowed poor offense to affect our defense. They shot 11 for 17 from the field. They went to the foul line 17 times. It was a defensive breakdown, in my opinion. I felt like we allowed, you know, missing some shots, not playing good offense, affect our defense, and you can't let that happen.
We're talking to Coach Mike Hopkins of the Huskies. His team getting ready to take on Utah State. That tip is going to be at 3:45 on Friday. Coach, how much of the games will you watch tomorrow? You guys are in the tournament. It's you sang the theme song that's there. It's a great time for basketball. How much do you guys watch the tournament, and how much do you try to, like, lock in on what you guys are going to do?
Listen, at the end of the day, you know, this was an experience, especially for the seniors, that's once in a lifetime. And you got to be able to enjoy it. There's no pressure here. It's the enjoyment. It's the focus. It's what you dreamed of. And so I'm watching every game that I can outside of getting ourselves prepared. You know, I think that gets you, the juices flowing. You start hearing that song. I think that's the great thing about playing Friday, is you get a chance to kind of watch the games before. You'll have NIT games, NCAA tournament games. You'll watch it. You'll see the excitement. You'll see upsets. And I think that kind of, you know, is an advantage playing on Friday, because you get that feeling of that NCAA tournament. And you never want to lose that feeling again, I can tell you that.
One of your seniors, David Crisp, has had an exceptional season. And I heard you make the point, and I think it's well taken, that, hey, he's the second leading scorer on the regular season Pac-12 champs, and he hasn't got a lot of accolades or a lot of credit. Does your offense go as he goes in some respects?
Two days before we played USC, we made 13 threes. We moved the ball. We had some great assists. The ball was moving. When we were getting hot and we were at Utah, Colorado, you know, he was making shots at a high efficiency rate. And so I think it's just one part of it. But yeah, obviously when you have another guy that can get 15 to 20 points, it's a huge advantage. But we're at our best when we've got five guys in double figures and a couple guys with 6 and 7. Everybody's contributing. And that makes it very hard for defenses to load up on us and to leave guys open. And, so when David started making those shots, it just changed who we were and it changed opposing teams' defenses, no question about it.
Hey, Coach, this is a pretty random question, but I'll ask it anyway. I was reading a story about you in The Athletic, the interview that you had with Jen Cohen back at Syracuse, and what possessed you to do push-ups during that interview?
when you get excited, when I get excited about something, I turn to like an 11-year-old kid. And so I just want to do push-ups. I'm a high-energy guy as it is. Maybe it's a release. I don't know. But, to have that opportunity and to, be a part of something special and a build and, when values align, and it's just so exciting. And, I'm just really, really blessed and, lucky to be the head coach at the University of Washington for sure.
So how many did you do?
It's like a quick 10, I got to get a little bit of a sweat. I got to feel a little bit of fatigue. And then I'm like, all right, okay, enough is enough. But I think I got 10.
Can you do 100 at a time?
Right now, no, I couldn't.
Well, the reason
I wish I could say I could.
The reason Jim is asking, because at 61 years old, when he gets really excited, which is right about the time our show starts, he'll drop down and get some push-ups to show us how excited he is.
Yeah, if I'm 61, I'm to show everybody how excited I am. I'm going to take a nap. About
that? I could do 25 at a time, Coach.
Sometimes he does nap during the show, actually.
It's because who I'm working with is so boring.
All right. Coach, we've talked to a couple of your players. I think by far everybody's favorite is Matisse Thybulle. What a humble, nice kid. I mean, that guy has got to be just a pleasure. I love the way he plays. Tell us a little bit more about Matisse Thybulle.
Well, Matisse is what you would call the perfect student athlete. He's great academically. He's obviously a heck of a player, but he just cares about people. If you walk and you watch him in a gym, it's just authentic and real. Little kid will be sitting over there. He makes sure he goes and says hi. He's just an outgoing personality, and there's very few people, and I love to surround myself with people that bring, they bring light into the room, and he's one of those guys. Like, when you see him, you smile. He's a beautiful kid. He's got a great smile, that definitely translates in terms of what we're trying to build here. So in all areas, the kid's just a superstar.
How good is he going to be in the NBA? He just seems like a guy that, there's all kinds of talk all over the board. He's a first rounder, second rounder, but it seems like he's really cut out to be a really fine NBA player.
You know what? He checks all the boxes. He's got skill. He's an excellent defensive player. And most importantly, he's got impeccable character. The guy's at the top of the list. And not only is he going to be a great NBA player for multiple years, but he's going to be a guy that, that's going to make a difference in the community. That's how he's built. And that's what makes him so special and rare.
Coach, can you tell us about the card that you either got from Matisse or Matisse's dad that's on your desk?
Well, it's one of those things where, you're doing a job and making sure that, can we put together a team, and you're trying to get people to buy into what you're trying to build. And, it's a very empty feeling. And when one of the best players is contemplating, and you got an hour to kind of build that relationship. And then next thing you know, they're calling to tell you that they believed in your vision and want to stay, is incredible. First of all. And then second of all, when a father, and I'm a father as well with three children, comes to you and says, I'm giving my son to you, and starts to explain his background and his story, and his life about him and his mother and all the different things, and gives you a card as their memory. I mean, that's what I call a brain tattoo. You know, it's something that I'll remember for the rest of my life. And the great thing about coaching is, you know, the games are one thing, winning and losing, championships, one thing, winning and losing. But the human side and the personal side is with you forever. And it's one of those moments, one of my greatest moments ever, because you also realize the magnitude of your position of making a difference in kids' lives. And it was just an incredible moment.
He is Coach Hopkins. Coach, you've got an incredible schedule. We're grateful for you taking the time. As someone who stepped on the University of Washington campus in 1993, when student admission to basketball games was free, the Huskies won 3 Pac-12 games, 5 overall that season. I know how hard it is to have the kind of success you guys have had. Congratulations on a great year, and let's go get them. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Thank you for having me on, guys.
That is Coach Hopkins. I'm going to go get Utah State on Friday, and then we're going to be on to North Carolina. Yeah! Howard Dean style.
That was really good. You sounded just like him.
Yeah! So going to be staying on Monday when I get here.
Think so?
Yes, I do. I believe so. It is Danny David Moore. We got a wide receiver signing in Dallas. We'll tell you who it is next.
This is Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
The answer to your question is 705. The question is, what channel's True TV? Because the play-in games are starting. 705, remember it. It's Danny David Moore. I'm pumped for the tournament to get underway. We got Fairleigh Dickinson taking on Prairie.
You got a bracket going yet?
I've started it. I haven't finished it.
Really? You started and haven't finished?
Yeah. I don't do it at one sitting.
Prairie View.
Okay. The Prairie View is going to be just fine if I don't remember the view part of it. Why would you want a view of a prairie?
They're the dogs.
What kind of view do you... That makes
Prairies
sense.
Prairies are beautiful.
Prairie dogs.
What is a prairie?
Prairie is just wide open spaces where you got all kinds of elbow room and you just sit in a chair and you just look out and you go, yeah.
There's a little house there.
Sounds like Pullman.
Yeah, exactly.
Pullman's in a prairie.
I love wide open spaces. I could live in Ritzville.
I like this idea of Jim just going, yeah.
Yeah. Ritzville sounds like Nirvana to me. I drive by Ritzville and I look at everyone over there and I think, man, I bet they're happy living here. I do. So there's some prairie views over there too, Danny. I'll bring it back for you. But I only take 5 minutes to fill out the bracket. I just buzz right through it. I look at the point spreads and kind of get an idea, although you're not picking against the spread in the bracket, but just to give you an idea of who's favored over, you know, someone else by how many, and then just go from there.
I'm not a big person on rules. There's one thing I do feel, though, is you should only have one bracket, right?
No.
And you can fill it out in multiple spots.
No? Oh, yeah. You can have a couple. I like to do an NIT tournament, too.
No, that's fine.
You do an NIT bracket?
Yeah.
But if you're in four different pools, four different NCAA tournament pools, do you have four different brackets, or do you have just the one bracket that you filled out?
No. I have four different ones. Yeah, I got the one that's the long shots, then you got the chalk, and then you got something in between. It's so disappointing when you get knocked out the first day. You're like, I got a team you put in there, and they get knocked out, and you're done.
But you're like a volume shooter at that point who's covering yourself, and one of these is going to be relevant. It's no reflection of skill then at that point. It's just, no, I just made a bunch of brackets.
Oh, there's millions, billions of different combinations. So the fact that I'm doing four, to get a perfect bracket, do they still offer that? Wasn't there like some $1 billion reward if you got a perfect bracket, but it's like a ridiculously high odds?
There was, like, it is.
Centillion to one, something
right.
like that.
That's not an actual
might be.
Yeah, it might be. And also, I did four, Danny. So out of all of that,
You've got a foreign quintillion shot.
Doesn't it bum you out though when you have a good bracket going and then one of the upsets you picked is on the other bracket and not on the one where it's going well?
Exactly. That's why you do four. Three or four. The Fairleigh Dickinson Knights are playing the Prairie View Panthers. And the only reason I know that is because I've asked Jess and DJ and they're watching it on TV in the control center. But we wouldn't know out here.
No. You would not.
Well, and we have
a TV in here.
We have interest in that game because the winner plays Gonzaga.
The Zags. That's right. In Utah, where I'll be on Thursday to watch this. Are you putting the Huskies to advance to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, I will. That'll be my sentimental one. I really believe that Utah State's going to win.
Hey, go Dogs, Coach.
Yeah, go Huskies is what I said.
Jim, good, what are Dave. You doing?
I'm taking Utah State.
You're taking Utah State.
Yeah.
And that just because you don't want to get any satisfaction if Washington wins. It pains you to put Washington advancing. You want misery for me. What are exactly the
Utah State's favored, and they've won 10 in a row coming in. And I just what I've seen of Washington the last 3 weeks doesn't make me feel like they're going to win a game in the tournament.
One piece of news in the NFL, Randall Cobb, who had been one of Green Bay Packers' top receivers, has reached a free agent deal with the Dallas Cowboys. It's a one-year, $5 million contract. The Cowboys have put together a pretty good receiving corps. You've got Amari Cooper. You've got Michael Gallup, the kid that was a rookie last year who looks very, very promising, and now you add Randall Cobb to that.
Yeah, Cole Beasley.
Beasley left. He went to Buffalo. Yeah, he left in free agency, and that was when Charlie Casserly said they targeted Dez Bryant too much last year, which was problematic, being that Dez Bryant did not play.
Yeah, sorry, Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie should not have made that point.
The texters think Dave's cheating by filling out more than one bracket.
I would agree. I think you have to have one bracket. I think you can enter multiple different spots, but you have to have one bracket. It should be, if I could make it part of the Bill of Rights, I would. If I could make it that you are required, along with the right to bear arms, it's a man shall only fill out one bracket for NCAA men's or women's basketball tournament brackets.
I'm getting hammered here. 253 says I'm a wussy.
How do you feel about that?
Well, it'll cause me some reflection.
Yeah, how much? Like 1 second?
I'll tell you when I'm done.
We got the Professor John Clayton coming up next.